Parshas Bo says the following. Okay, by Yom Rashom Moshe, Bo El Paro, go to Paro. Kenya Chladitias Levo Vesleiv Avadov, Lamaim Shisio Sasai Ela Bekirbo, go to Paro because I hardened his heart and the heart of his servants so that I can put these signs on him, so I can give him these makos. Okay, if you read through that pasuk correctly, you didn't hear what was going on. It doesn't make any sense. Go to Paro because I hardened his heart, right, so that I can give him these signs. Now, what does Rashi say Bo'al Paro means? Rashi says Bo'al Paro b'hisrabo, give him a warning, give him like some forewarning. I don't understand. If his heart is hardened anyway, what's the warning going to do? What are you warning him for? He can't say no. Like, you go up to him, warn him, if you don't let the people go, then you're going to get punished. I mean, he can't say no. He can't say, like, okay, I'll let them all go. It's not going to happen. So what in the world are we asking? What is he asking for? What's this fahasrabo that we're asking him to do? What's this warning that we're asking him to do? And that's the first question. Second question. Later on in the pasuk, the psukim go on and it says very, very strange pasuk. He says, Admasai me anta leonos miknoi. How long are you going to do this? How long, Paro, are you going to not listen to me? He can't do anything different. He had a hardened heart. It's not like he can say no or yes. How long are you going to do this, Paro? I don't know. I don't have a choice. God is making me do this. I wish I could tell you. It's just a very, very strange thing. So you're right. Maybe he doesn't know. But what's Moshe Rabbeinu telling him? He has to warn him and he has to say something. His heart is gone. He doesn't have anything to say. So what are we asking over here? What are we trying to do? So, and plus, just what's the concept of this whole idea of hardening his heart in Bechira? And it's a famous question. The Ramban, the Sforno, everybody asks the question. So, one of the ways of answering, the Ramban has two answers, the Sforno is the famous answer, and they go through a bunch of different ways of looking through it. One of the best answers that I've heard is that, yes, he could do tshuva, but he won't do tshuva. He could do it, but he won't do tshuva. Why? Sometimes the decisions that you make in life lead you to a position where it's almost impossible for you to get off your high pedestal and step down and be able to listen to other people. I mean, there is no way that President Obama is going to be able to listen to just stop a person off the street anymore. He just can't. You know, like, he's not going to step off from being the president. Well, listen, if you weren't president, then you would listen to me. Probably, but he's president. He's not going to listen to you. As much as you might be right, Yaakov, he's not going to listen to you. You can write all the letters in the world, free Pollard, you can do whatever you want. But he's not going to listen to you. What does he have to do? He has to step down. He has to be willing to take a step down, to look down and say, like, I'm just a regular person, and really become an anav, and then he'll be able to say to himself, oh man, I did the wrong thing. But otherwise, he's just going to defend himself and say that he's all right. Does anybody see a Tyrus Bogoyevich? Or say to himself that this is where I am and there's nothing else that I know I was correct. I know that I was right. When everybody votes against you, there's like something that's wrong with you and something that's wrong with you. But that's the shot over here. That something, you just sit there and you say to yourself, it makes no sense. He could have done tshuva. But his heart was hard. I mean, what Akadosh Baruch Hu did was put it naturally in the world that he wouldn't do tshuva in this situation. Could he? Yeah, he could. If he really, really tried, he could. But he wouldn't do tshuva. He wouldn't end up doing it. And by that, automatically, your heart is hardened. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu goes up to him and says, Bo'al Paro, warn him. Why? His heart is hardened. That doesn't mean he can't say, let the people go. That doesn't mean he can't say anything. Is it hard for him to do so? Yeah. Does he have siyata d'shmaya? Does he have God's help trying to make him say, please let them go? No. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not helping him say that. Is it more likely that he's going to say, let them stay here and take the punishment? Yeah, it's very likely that's what's going to happen. But that's his own fault. If Paro wanted to, he could have said, no, what's the raya? Because what happened to Paro later on? Became the king of Nineveh. What changed? When he became the king of Nineveh, and Yonah came up to him and said, you guys are going to be destroyed. What changed? He got off his throne and wore sackcloth and sat down on the floor and cried. Because when you're a king and you're sitting on your throne, you don't feel the pain. When he sits down on the floor, he realizes, I'm doing something wrong. I did something that's awful for him. That's what Paro needed to do. He needed to throw himself down, to really sacrifice himself. and then he'd be able to do tshuva. But until that point, it was impossible. And that's ad masai me'anto, Leonis Mitzrayim. How long are you going to wait and do this? I'm sorry?
Isn't that also Paro, though?
Yeah, 100%. That's what I'm saying. That's what Paro had to do. It took him a long time to get to that point. That's the idea. Now, you should know, this is a famous, famous Hasidic report, but I saw Reb Schwab said it. So if Reb Schwab says it, you know that it's got to be a little bit, it's a little bit Litvish as well. Reb Schwab was one of the famous Talmidim of Reb Shamshon Raphael Hirsch, but every Makkah that happened in Mitzrayim was a Makkah for the Mitzrayim, meaning it hurt the Mitzrayim, but it was a refuah for Bnei Yisrael. Meaning Bnei Yisrael ended up getting a refuah from it. They got some sort of, I don't know what you want to say, something good happened to them, a benefit that got to them from the Makkos that happened in Mitzrayim. Now, where do we get that from? The Zohar says a pasuk in Yeshaya. The Nogaf Hashem is Mitzrayim, Noguf, the Rafu. Hashem plagued the Mitzrayim with a plague and a healing. What does that mean? The plague went to the Egyptians. The refuah went to the Jews. So every makkah that happened, dam, that went down for Mitzrayim, somehow gave some type of a refuah for the Jews. There was something good that the Jews got out of it. What was it that the Jews got out of it? We have no idea. There was some type of refuah that happened. That means if Mitzrayim won't be machnia, Mitzrayim won't get off their throne, and they have a hardened heart, and will refuse to acknowledge God's presence. So what happens to the Jews? Even more so, they're going to have the exact opposite. They're going to acknowledge God's presence. They're going to know that there's God even more so, and they're going to have even more emunah. They're going to have even more trust in God. Because whatever happened to the Mitzrayim, they'll get the exact opposite from those makos. The Jews will look at it from the outside as if they're looking down at God punishing them and saying, wow, God really does exist. That was the refuah that the Bnei Yisrael had. So slowly but surely, as the Mitzrayim got one makah, the second makah, the third makah, slowly but surely the Jews had more and more and more emunah. Kept going further and further and further and on to the point where at Kriyas Yamsuf, they were able to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They saw God clearly, and they had emunah enough to be able to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu doing everything. They had no questions. There was no question about anything that happened. That's pshat, you should know, and what we need nowadays. Can you imagine? I want you to think, what kind of a plan can we have? What can we have to be able to make all the Reform Jews that live out there in the suburbs, all the conservative Jews that are out there in the middle of nowhere, and the traditional Jews, how in the world are we going to make them from? How are you going to make them from? How are they going to accept the Mashiach? Mashiach comes by and they're going to become from? How in the world would that happen? Why would they say yes? What are we going to do for them? You know what Pshat is? They have the same problem in Mitzrayim. So, Anachanami, let's hope that the four-fifths don't have to die. But you have an idea where what's going to happen? You're going to have the makos for the Mitzrayim. There will be a makah for those people who deserve the makahs. And everybody else will get a refuah from those makahs. But Bnei Yisrael will see clearly that there's a God involved. There's the hand of God involved. And the same thing that happens to those people, there will be a makah, will be able to see some type of refuah. It's going to help us even more. We're going to go further and further and further. That's the shot behind, Rav Wolfson says. And it's brought down. This is brought down from the Gra. Why Rabbi Yehuda gave simanim? Rabbi Yehuda, we all know from the makos. Rabbi Yehuda, Yenosem Bem Simanim, made simanim, did Sach, Adash, Biachav. What's the point in doing such a makah? So it's a brilliant answer. Because the pshat is, up until now, meaning in Mitzrayim, what did they have? They had a little bit of a makah. They had some of the makah. But the full-blown makah is going to be lost at level when Mashiach comes. I mean, you think that was dumb? That was just dick. When it gets to dam, it's going to be a lot worse. That was just tzeh from Tzfardeya. When it comes to Tzfardeya, it's going to be a heck of a lot worse. And it's going to go further and further and further. It's going to be worse and worse and worse. We only had the Tzach HaDash Be'achav, and that's why Bnei Yisrael were not fully affected. Because they only had the beginning of the Makkah, which means that they only had the beginning of the Amunah. So four-fifths of Bnei Yisrael died. But when Mashiach comes, and Mashiach comes about, then we're going to have the full Dam, the full Tzfardeya, the full Kenan, the full Arov, and the full everything. Everything is going to happen one after the other to punish those who are trying to punish us, to punish those who will not be saved when Mashiach comes. And that time, Bnei Yisrael will have a full refuah from all their problems, and then we're no longer going to have any Reform Jews. We're no longer going to have these Reform rabbis giving their garbage and wherever they are. They're going to become full. Because they're going to sit there and going to be like, oh, now it makes sense. Now I understand it. It's going to take a lot. It's going to take Mashiach to do. But it's going to be the idea of how we're going to bring all these people out. And I'm just going to give a couple of Ramazan, by the way. What do we do in the Seder? Safun. What's Safun? You take the matzah and you split it in half. The big half you hide for later on. till later on, right? That's what you do during Yachatz. And the little matzah, what do you do for the little matzah? You put it on the table. Because what happened to Mitzrayim? They got the little matzah. They saw the little part of the matzah. They saw a little bit of what's going to be lost at Lavo. But the real matzah, the afikomen, the real thing that's going to happen, it's hidden until later on. It's hidden until something happens. That's Safon. That's the whole shot behind what Safon is all about. That's and what happens around Safon? That's where Eliyahu HaNavi comes in. It says, Shvoh Chamascha L'Goyim Asher L'Yedeucha, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to pour out His wrath on all those Goyim who don't know You, don't want to have anything to do with You. That's Shvoh Chamascha, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to bring about all those Makos of Dan, Tzardeh, Kinam, and Arov, Endeavor, and everything, all on them, so that we can get a refuah. What we've seen is just a drop in the bucket, and that's why you take the kos. And what do you do when you say Dam Tzvardei Akinim? You let out a drop. A drop. A drop. What are we going to do when Mashiach comes? You're going to pour out the whole kos. The whole maka is going to happen. You're going to keep filling it up. Dam. Another one, please. Pull it in. Tzvardei. It's going to be Shulchan Moshe Lagoyim. That's what he does. He pours out his wrath. The whole cup of wine is going to be thrown out to be able to get to them, for us to be able to get some type of emunah. Don't think that everybody's going to get Mashiach in the right way. Don't take me all wrong and say, like, all the guys are going to die. I'm not into that. I don't think it's true. Well, I don't think that's honest. It's the shot that the guys will get what they need. We're going to get the emunah that we need, and everything's perfectly fine. Now, there is a physical way of getting that, aside from the spiritual idea of what this whole thing is. Of Kaddish Baruch Hu bring about a maka, and we automatically get a muna. Is a physical way of doing that. If you ever see a Talmud Chacham staring at you, be scared. Be very, very scared. I'll tell you why. Bo El Paro. Now, it's not Bo El Paro, it's Leich El Paro. As we all know, the word should be go to Paro. It's not come to Paro. God is not with Paro. You're supposed to go to Paro. So what's the idea of Bo? The idea behind Bo is there must be something that he's got to take from Paro, in which it's not a yitziah, where Moshe Rabbeinu is not losing anything. He's going to do something. He's going to come do something. So what is it? Hashem is saying, there's something in Paro in which I'm there, and you've got to take me out. So what is that? Every Rasha and every person in the world has Kedusha within them. Sometimes it's very hard to find that Kedusha. Sometimes you got to reach way down inside that person to find that Kedusha, because they're so full of Tumah on the outside, there's barely any Kedusha there. And to reach down and get that, it's all the way in. The more powerful the person is in Tumah, the harder it is to find that Kedusha. You know, the less tummy the person is, and it's easier to find that Kedusha. You can just find it from the outside and take it out. When a Talmid Chacham looks at a Rasha, what he's doing is pulling out the holy sparks, the Nitzotzos HaKadoshim they're called, from that Rasha, and taking those sparks for himself. So what he's doing is, when a Talmid Chacham looks at a person, sometimes, it depends on who the person is, he may be taking the Kedusha from you so that you don't squander that Kedusha. If he thinks that you're going to sin while you have that Kedusha, he'll take it away from you so that he's gone. Now, usually, the Talmud Chacham leaves it to each one of those people. But who's he to decide? If the Talmud Chacham can see that the person's about to do something tame, then yes, he can do it. But yes, you're right. And can I do it? No. Can you do it? Maybe. There are certain people that will be able to do it. Modi, for sure, without a question. But by other people, I don't know. Not everybody will be able to be on that level. But what's the point? Because Mitzrayim had all this Kedusha within it. All this Kedusha that was hidden inside Mitzrayim. And the point behind the goals of Mitzrayim was to be able to take that Kedusha away from that Tumah. Tumah is attracted to the Kedusha. Tumah wants to spoil that Kedusha. And all it wants to do is surround that Kedusha and take it for themselves and hide it deep, deep, as far down as you can. So they went down to Mitzrayim, and what did they do in Mitzrayim? They took the spoils. Their silver, their gold, and their clothes. They took away the Kedusha, so to speak, from Mitzrayim, till they left them as a Mitzudah She'in Badagin, or a Mitzula She'in Badagon. If anybody wants to figure out what in the world that means, Rashi is a machlokes. Was it a trap full of fish, or a silo full of grain? Silo emptied of its grain. Come on, what in the world does that mean? It's referring to Kedusha in different ways. Dagon, we know, have no ayin hara. Dagon is another thing. There's all different ways that they were trying to do. Who would have the most Kedusha hidden the farthest down that would be the hardest to take out? Who would have all that Kedusha that's hidden down? And the Tumah has overcome that Kedusha? That would be the king. The king of such a nation would have the most Kedusha hidden by that Tumah, thrown down as far down. And the only way to get out that Kedusha would be the greatest person in Klal Yisrael, who would be able to go ahead and take away that Kedusha. That would be Moshe Rabbeinu Paro. The idea of what Moshe Rabbeinu was trying to do was to go ahead and take away the Kedusha from Paro. But there was a problem. How would Moshe know when he'd gone too far? Because you know what sometimes happens? You've seen these words in the Gemara sometimes. Sometimes if you take away too much Kedusha, then the guy loses all his Kedusha and then he can't live anymore. He becomes a pile of bones and becomes a piece of dust on the ground. So you don't want that to happen. Killing Paro just by looking at him? You want Paro to see every Makkah. You want Paro to be alive by Kriyas Yamsuf. So Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't kill him, so how was he going to know when it was too late? So Hashem told him, don't worry, I'll give you a sign. I'll give you a sign, and that's when you're going to be able to stop looking. So that sign happened right over here. Such an unbelievable thing. But first, we have to go with another side. You should know there's another side to this. There's a downside to this Kedusha. You ready for what the Russia is doing? A Russia is looking at the Tzaddik and trying to take away his Tumah for himself. Trying to take the Tumah out of the Tzaddik and bring it for himself. Trying to bring the Tumah more to the forefront. Can I give you an example? A Kiruv rabbi goes to a college campus. Goes to this college campus. And as he goes to the college campus, he goes to debate the kids on whether or not Judaism is the Iker. Okay? Now a guy goes there, one of the college guys, a liberal, who's probably wearing a couple things on his lapel. You know, like little pink flags and red flags and everything you can think of. Little things all over his lapel and his jacket. So like, I'm for everything except for Judaism. So he's, you know, he's all for it. And the most liberal of liberals gets out there and he's ready to fight. And he wants to fight. What does the Kiruv guy want to do? He wants to bring out the Kedusha within that guy. What does the other guy want to do? He wants to bring out the Tumah in that rabbi so he can destroy the rabbi and say, oh, that rabbi is a nothing. He's a nobody. I killed him. I destroyed him. Not only in arguments, but say like, oh, your tummy is well. He's trying to bring out the Tumah within that person. So as much as Moshe Rabbeinu was going there to make Paro take away the Kedusha from Paro and bring it for Klal Yisrael, Paro was trying to do the exact same thing to Moshe Rabbeinu. So Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid maybe Paro's going to win. So when Paro saw him, Paro said, you know, I've been acting all easy up until now. He yelled at him and he said, as soon as he heard about what he was going to do with Makas Bechoros, he says, Al Tosef Ro'os Panai, don't look at my face anymore, Moshe Rabbeinu. Ki biyom Ro'os Panai, the next time you look at my face, Tamus, you'll die. Because Paro said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take away all your Tumah, and if I take away all your Tumah, you're going to be entirely spiritual. And what happens to a guy who's entirely spiritual? Entirely Ruchni. He becomes a Malach and he dies. He said, I'll take you away from this world, Moshe Rabbeinu. Because he thought he was working on Moshe Rabbeinu the same way that Moshe Rabbeinu was doing to Paro. And he was right. Moshe Rabbeinu became extremely Ruchni. Thanks to Paro, Moshe Rabbeinu was able to go up on Har Sinai for 40 days and 40 nights and not eat or drink a thing. Because his Tumah was taken away from him by Paro. Paro was right. What did Moshe Rabbeinu say back? Kein dibarta, lo sivod ros panecha. You're right. Okay. Shine. I'm with you. I'm never going to look at you ever again. I took away, that was my sign. I don't have to take away any more Kedusha from you. And if you take away any of my Tumah from me, I'm going to be too spiritual and I'm going to die. So we're good. I don't think we'll see each other ever again. And he didn't. Moshe Rabbeinu never saw Paro ever again. He never had anything to do with Paro ever again. All because of everything that they had to do up until now was all done.
Didn't Paro also find Moshe later on?
And did he see him? Did he see him? You're right, he went to go find him. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't look. Moshe Rabbeinu looked down, he said, yes, alright, we'll be out by tomorrow. That's it. And Paro was running around. But Paro couldn't take away any more Tumah from him, and Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't take away any Kedusha from him. That's the pshat behind that. Now, we have to go a little bit further. I am going to go into something that's a little bit strange, but one of the greatest Gemaras you have ever heard in your life, which I doubt, I will put money on, that nobody here has gone through, because it's, unless he's on Daf Yomi. Shabbos Kuf Mem Zayin Amud Beis. Who does Shabbos? Kufan Zayin Amud Beis, but it's an unreal Gemara. Okay. Parsha HaChodesh is in this Parsha. Kiddush HaChodesh, we should call it. HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem. This month for you, Rosh Chodashim Rishon Lachem LaChodesh HaShana. The very first mitzvah that Klal Yisrael was commanded with. Very first mitzvah they were commanded with is right here. HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem. Now here's the Gemara. The Gemara says Rabbi Eliezer Ben Aroch. Anybody know Rabbi Eliezer Ben Aroch? How do we know him? Anybody recognize the name? Of? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, very good. Pirkei Avos, second parak. Mishnah Yud and Mishnah Yud Aleph, depends if you're using the art scrolls, and it's like Yud Beis and Gimel, they're all messed up there. But either way, Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch was one of five Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Five Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. They said that Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus was one of the greatest. If you put him on a scale, then he'd weigh down all the other Chachamim. But Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch, they said that if you put all the Talmidei Chachamim on one side of the scale, and Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, and you put Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch on the other side of the scale, Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch would weigh down everything. Unreal Talmud Chacham, the greatest Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Nobody compares to him. They all said their different statements. What is the greatest path that a person should go on? Everybody had their own statements. Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch said, Leiv Tov. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, you're right. You agree with Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch. Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch was supposed to be this unbelievable Talmud Chacham that nobody was like. The Gemara Shabbos and Kuf Men Zayin Mabei says, Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch went to a place called Diumeses. He went to this place called Diumeses. And he had a little bit of the yayin there, a little bit of the wine, and he bathed in the bathhouses over there. He bathed in the bathhouses. And he forgot all of his learning due to the pleasures of this world. He got so involved in taivas gashmias, in different taivas in this world, he completely forgot his learning. Completely forgot his learning. And he couldn't remember a thing. He came back to the yeshiva, and he started reading this parsha. And instead of reading HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem, he read HaChereish Haya Libam. HaChereish Haya Libam. The Dalet to a Resh, the Zayin to a Yud, and a Chaf to a Beis. What in the world happened over here? What kind of a Gemara is this? Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch went that far, that he went so far off, that he got into Taivas? It's a tremendous Talmud Chacham that with the greatest Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. He's going to be folded these taivas. That's number one. Number two, what in the world is, what was he doing there in the first place? What was he going there for? What was the point of him going there? I'm like, I understand. We need a vacation sometimes. You go to Miami, look at the nice tan. That is a very, very nice tan. You go to Miami to run a little bit. You know, you go to like, you know, California. You go nowhere up north because there's nothing up north. It's just colder. You go somewhere like nice and you go on a vacation. I understand that. Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch needed a vacation? He needed a vacation? And he got so involved in his vacation, he's sitting there sunning himself and then he's like, oh, Torah. What happened? I totally forgot about the Torah. To the point where we forgot Hebrew? Forgot the first mitzvah that God commanded the Jews? What in the world is going on with Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch? So the Ben Ish Chai says, we only have half the story. Half the story is, Koelis Rabbah, Zion, says, when Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai died, all of his Talmidim went to Yavne. They all learned in Yavne. But Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch didn't go to Yavne. He went to meet his wife first, and then he was going to go to Yavne. So he went to this place called Imaun Ziumeses, whatever it's called. He went there. And his wife was there, and he said to his wife, okay, I want to go back to Yavne to go meet the Talmidei Chachamim. His wife said to him, well, you should go to them. You're the Rebbe now. You're the greatest Rebbe out there. They should come to you. Don't go to Yavne, they should go to you. So who was the Rebbeim after that? Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus and Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch never became the Rebbe. Why? Because he stayed in Ziumeses, and he said, you're right. And he waited, and he waited, and he waited, and nobody came. So by that time, he forgot his learning. He forgot his learning because he wasn't learning with anybody. So when people asked him shailas later on, and he went to Yavne, finally, after years and years of learning by himself, he was totally off in everything he was doing. And that's the remez of that he was totally off in everything that he was trying to do. Okay, we have to understand something. How did this happen to him? So you have to understand, a Talmud Chacham sometimes darshans based on his own life experiences and based on things that he knows is true. We've said this before about Yosef and Yehuda, if you remember. Yosef was a man who could only be up on top or way down below. He could either be the king of the brothers or sold as a slave. He could be the king of the slaves or thrown into jail. He could be the king of Mitzrayim, but he could never be in the middle. While Yehuda was a guy who worked his way back up slowly but surely, climbed his way back up by doing tshuva little by little by little. He wasn't an extremist like Yosef was. Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch was an extremist. He's called by the Pirkei Avos a Mayan HaMisgaber, a spring that keeps going further and further and further, that it just strengthens in and of itself. That when you told him a piece of learning, you told him a vort in Torah, he would take it and he'd go so much further. He'd take it and be like, oh, and there's another Gemara. Oh, and there's another vort. Oh, and there's another parish. And he would go further and further, and he'd take it further and further, bubbling over, so to speak. Overflowing with Torah. Overflowing with Torah. That's what he was. He was a Mayan HaMisgaber. But that works in the other way as well. If he starts having a taiva, he can't just have one taiva. He can't just have one. He's got to finish the whole bag. He's got to finish the whole thing. He's a Mayan HaMisgaber. When he goes into something, he's an extremist. If he gets into taiva, he's a taivanik. He goes into the pool, and he's sitting there, and he's bathing. And that's what he was like. It wasn't a... We have to find out why he went there in the first place. But once he got involved... Once he got involved, that threw him down. And people have to know that about themselves. If they're the type of person that they're Mayan HaMisgabers, that if they get into a taiva, they'll go further and further with that taiva, that if I watch one movie, it'll end up being two movies. If I watch two movies, it's going to be three. And if I go further and further, I'll do everything. Then you got to know, it's time to stop. You have to stop yourself from doing it in the first place, because you know you'll go further. If you say to yourself, well, I'm just going to watch this, and I'm not going to worry about anything else. I'm not going to be this or that or the other. Then okay, that's fine. But if you know that you're going to keep going, then that's a problem. For Rav Schwab says in other words, he said that the greatest thing that a person could have, they all argued, what's the best thing a person can have? A good friend, a good neighbor, that you see what's going on in the future, be seeing what's going to be in the future. Says Rabbi Elazar, a lev tov, a great heart. Says Rabbi Yochum and Zakeh, that's true, but that's a big danger. The heart is the place where taivas are. That's the place where your desires are. If you go ahead and you start giving something to your heart, you give a little bit of taiva to your heart, and you hold that everything is in the heart, it can destroy every bit of kedusha that you have inside you. Your physicality can take over and destroy you. So he told them, Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch was told, don't get involved in taiva because you'll go too far. But he did it. And he went out there. What was the pshat? And that's why he tried starting over with this first mitzvah. He wanted to start over, but it was hard for him. So what did he say? Ha-cheresh, ha-ya, li-bam. Their hearts are silent. His heart couldn't do it anymore. He had the lev tov. He was perfect in every way. But he got involved in taiva. His heart started doing taiva. He couldn't let go. He just couldn't stop it. And he started becoming deaf to anything else but what his heart wanted, his heart desired. What his heart had a taiva for. Let's get into a bit of Kabbalah, though. Ready for a little bit of Kabbalah? Just, the Kabbalah Center is coming up next. But Dalid Zayin Chof is the shame of HaKadosh Baruch Hu known as Dizach. Dizach. Resh Yud Beis is the shame of HaKadosh Baruch Hu of Riv. That's the name that HaKadosh Baruch Hu uses. Dizach is to help you remember things. Riv is to help you forget things, to make you forget certain things in your learning. There are times where you have to forget something. If you learned Krum, if you learned a bad pshat, or a kofer taught you Torah, then you got to forget it. You got to make yourself forget it. That's where Riv comes in. Sometimes that shame is a very, very important shame, depending on what you're doing. The Netzutzeh Shimshon says, the tikkun of Riv is a shame of HaKadosh Baruch Hu known as Taka, with a Dalit instead of the Hay. I don't know why it's spelled with a Dalit, and that's why I'm not a Kabbalist. I will be eventually, because I'm going to try to, all my heart is, when I'm 40, that night will be crazy. But until that point, it's not happening. For some reason, the Shem Taka Tav Chav Hay turned into the Shem Tav Chav Dalit, and I don't know why, I have absolutely no idea. It's going to be... Don't have good bad thoughts in your head. But either way, when you have that shame, it's going to be written on Mashiach's forehead. And when Mashiach comes about, nobody will ever forget anything ever again. Riv will become Kiddush, and there won't be any problems anymore. Everything will be perfectly fine. In Achodesh, Hazeh Lochem is the shame of Dizach. That's the shame, the Dalit of Achodesh, the Zion of Hazeh, and the Chof of Lochem is Dizach. So by learning this pasuk correctly, you'll remember all your Torah learning. You will never have any problem. It's also, HaKodesh HaZeh Lachem is the Gematria of 424, which is the Gematria of Mashiach ben David. And that's what we mean when we say, Asei Leman Dosach. Do it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for your Dos, for your law. Dosach is the shame of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of Tof Chof Dalit. And Dizach is the shame of El, which is the shame for Zikaron to be able to go around, okay, to be able to be there. So that's what happened, that he got the shame of Riv, Hachirish, Hayalivam, the letters that he had, and that was Reish Yud Beis, instead of Dizach that he should have said, and thus he forgot his learning, and everything was all out there. That's the little bit of Kabbalah. But what did he do? Said Heshi Wengro. It's random. I'm mentioning Rav Schwab, Maril. I mentioned it's very Shlomo over here. We mentioned a couple things from the Institute of Shimshon, and then Heshi Wengro, Rev Heshi Wengro, we'll call him. He's not a rabbi, but unbelievable board. This is one of the best boards I've ever heard before in my life. Why did he go there in the first place? So Heshi told me he had a Shavu Brachos once. The pshat behind it is he was a Mayan Miskaver. When you think of a Mayan Miskaver, what's the pshat? It's an overflowing river, right? It flows and then it flows out. He was so full of Torah. All he wanted to do was give over the Torah to other people. So what did he do? He went out to a college campus. He went out to a college campus. And he started giving over his Torah. He was so overflowing, he wanted to give it to everybody. And he figured the best place for him to go was this place where there was full of taivas. And people were sitting there and they never learned a day in their life. Because they were just into the taivas of this world. They were just into those taivas and they didn't learn anything. And he figured the greatest place that I could go to, the greatest place for me to be and to teach Torah and to give over Torah and disseminate Torah. Where should I go? I should go to this place, to UMass, this place full of taiva, where they won't learn otherwise. Nobody else wanted to go there. Everybody else said, it's tamei. It's horrible, that place. You're going to be affected adversely, and it's going to be horrible for you. You can't go there. There's too much tuma in that area. Rabbi Wasserman Roth said, I'll do it. I'm going to do it. I can do this, and I'll go there, and it'll be okay. And he started giving over Torah. And it worked for a little bit. But you don't realize that the same way that you're going there to give over the Torah, the tuma starts affecting you little by little. And little by little, without him noticing it, all of a sudden, Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch had become more and more tameh. So into, until all of a sudden, he's watching the same movies they are. He's got the same Facebook page as everybody else. He's got the same MySpace. He's going around, he's just like, I'm doing it for the right reasons! But Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch realized, he was throwing himself down into tuma and didn't realize how far he had gone. He didn't realize. I was sitting in the basement in Skokie the other day, and I was sitting there for, I don't know, for a second, it was the end of second Seder. A guy comes up to me and he says, you know the whole pshat behind the lobster, right? So I said, no. He said, the lobster, the way to boil it, you won't go into the water, stop. You need it while it's still alive. You have to boil the lobster alive. So what do? You turn up the heat of the water little by little by little till the lobster doesn't even realize he's boiled alive. Lobster doesn't even realize. That's how you boil the lobster. You get him little by little by little until he's boiled alive. And that way he's dead and everything's all good. I've been sitting in the base medrash for so long, I didn't notice how freezing it was in the base medrash because the heat was off. And all of a sudden he said, you don't realize it. Go outside and walk back in. You'll realize how freezing it was in the basement. The heat had just turned off, and you didn't realize it. That's what Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch. It's the exact same way. He didn't realize how far he had gone. He thought he was perfectly fine, but when you're Makarev people, you think that's easy? It's not easy. You throw yourself down. It's like most of them go into Paro. You don't think he's going to be a little bit adversely affected? HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, go to Paro anyway. Go to Paro anyway. You'll be okay. I promise you, you'll be okay. Why? Keni Echbarati Yizliba. He's not under his own volition anymore. I'm controlling Paro. As much as he's taking away your tumah, he's not affecting you adversely. That tumah is not going to affect you. The pure difference between the Nei Yisrael getting that Kedusha and the Mitzrayim getting that tumah was Choshech. Unbelievable what Choshech was. Absolutely unbelievable. Such a darkness for the Mitzrayim. But what was it for Bnei Yisrael? Well, the whole Bnei Yisrael, Haya Or B'Mosh Vosam. They had light wherever they went. Light wherever they went. Could there have been a bigger difference? How can a choshech be or for other people? So Schwab says, unbelievable answer. Ever looked at the sun? Ever looked at it? No, right? What would happen if you look at the sun? You go blind. Oh. So what was the choshech? So the Yesh Omer in the Miyamloe says, it was the or agunos. Kadosh Baruch Hu brought the or agunos into the world. The Mitzrayim were blinded by that light. Blinded by the or, they couldn't see. It was like staring at the sun. They couldn't see, and eventually it came to a point where they couldn't move. The or agunos was just so powerful, they couldn't even move. They were so scared, you can call it. But the Bnei Yisrael took that or and not only gained from it and grew from it, they were able to see through doors, see through treasure chests, and find out where the Mitzrayim hid their treasures. They used it for x-ray vision, in the good way. They were like Superman, to the extreme. They had the what's the word? Where was he from? Kal-El was from? What was the Krypton? Wait, but kryptonite is bad for Superman. Oh, so like the sun. Oh, but the sun was good, right? It was the yellow sun. Whenever you need to power up, you went to the yellow sun. That's right. You don't remember from the comics? You got to get into the comics. You got to get into it. 10 years ago, you should have been into it. All right, anyway, when the sun is there, that ore can become choshech to one person, and ore, pure ore, the greatest ore in the world, to somebody else. So I'll ask you a question, and this is how we'll end off. 4/5 of Bnei Yisrael died during choshech. How'd they die if it was ore? Ulechol Bnei Yisrael Hayor b'Moshe Osam. Is that U Bnei Yisrael Hayor b'Moshe Osam? Ule Tzadikim Shal Bnei Yisrael Hayor b'Moshe Osam. Ulechol Bnei Yisrael Hayor b'Moshe Osam. Is that what happened to the 4/5 of the Jews that died? How'd they die? With the Oregonans. Nothing bad can happen from the Oregonans. So how'd they die? You gotta hear this word. I mean, this is just absolutely unbelievable. Yaakov Ruveni, every Jew that died in the Makkah of Choshech, you know where they went? Straight to Gan Eden. The Oraganus grabbed them and took them into Gan Eden. Why? Because they weren't ready to leave Mitzrayim. They didn't really want to go. They weren't ready. And they hadn't gained enough of a refuah from the Makos to be able to leave Mitzrayim. They hadn't gained enough from it. So they couldn't do it. Such a refuah from that Mako. The Makkah was such a refuah for some of the Bnei Yisrael that they went straight to Gan Eden from it. Now I want you to think for a second. Some people didn't die during those 4/5. Two people didn't die, and they were the most evil people you've ever heard of. Why? Who were they? Some people in Bnei Yisrael didn't even deserve, the refuah didn't even affect them so much, they didn't even deserve to go to Gan Eden yet. So they left Mitzrayim so that they would see these miracles, and hopefully through the miracles of Har Sinai and Kriyas Yam Suf, that would help them. Not even the Or of Choshech could help them become better Jews. But Dathan Abiram didn't do it. They failed miserably. So where did they go? Gehenim forever. Swallowed up in Gehenim forever. Korach Zemachlokes, where he went. I mean, no, how do you know that Korach was swallowed up in the ground? The Gemara says it's machlokas whether he was swallowed up by the ground or burned by the fire, but it definitely doesn't say in the Pasuk. The Pasuk just says that Dathan and Abiram and their families were swallowed up. Korach, we don't know about. We don't know about Korach. But if Korach was swallowed up, which is mashma in the Pasuk in Devarim, if he was swallowed up in the ground, yes, with Korach. But that's the shot. There were certain people out there that was the exact opposite. So think about that. As long as you somewhat want to try, it is not there yet. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will pull you into Gan Eden straight. But if you don't want to try, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will pull you down to Gehenna alive. If you don't want to try, that's the difference. Paro didn't want to try. He didn't want to try. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu put him through all the makos you can imagine, and we don't know what happened to Paro at the end. If he did learn his lesson, he did tshuva, then he went to Nineveh and he became a better person. If he didn't, then he died horribly, the worst death you can imagine in the Yam Suf. Worse than any other mitzvah. Everything you've heard about what happened in Kriyas Yam Suf, and what we may go through next week, it happened to Paro. Worse and worse and worse. But it's such a crazy message. Anything bad that happens, you can gain from. The only reason why it's there in this world is for you to gain from and for you to become a better person because of it. That's where that Torah comes from. So anything tell me that happens in the world, when Rav Blagojevich has this whole thing happen to him, and he gets voted against and thrown out, you can gain from that. I now know not to run for governor of Illinois. There's a couple other things I learned from it. But that's one major thing that you can gain from and learn from and become a better person. That's the point of any makkah that happens to anybody in this world, and that's the point of it for us. All right, guys, have a good Shabbat.